This is Jay Sekulow back in the radio studio today discussing the acquittal of the president.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The Senate, having tried Donald John Trump, president of the United States, upon two articles of impeachment exhibited against him by the House of Representatives, and two-thirds of the senators present not having found him guilty of the charges contained therein, it is therefore ordered and adjudged that the said Donald John Trump be, and he is hereby, acquitted of the charges in said articles.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I want to thank my legal team, by the way. Pat, Jay, Pat, you guys stand up.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the studio. I'm glad to be back now that the trial of the century, some people are calling it, the impeachment trial and the proceedings are over. So we're back in the studio. We're going to discuss some of that because it's the first time I've really been able to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you've had you on for maybe 30 seconds at a time on those days when we were heading into the Senate trial. I got a couple of updates from you, but this is just a chance for people to really want to give it on this Friday an opportunity to, for those of you listening who've been watching the trial, you saw the president, we carried the president's event yesterday. Of course, we've talked about the State of the Union as well, but the acquittal event yesterday at the White House that you attended, some of the other lawyers, your mom was there as well, and he recognized you. We played that in the opening. It's an opportunity for people to ask you questions now that this is over about the experience. It is certainly a trial unlike any other in the United States court systems. It was very long for trial purposes for
2 weeks
for this stage, but in the scheme of things, about as short as you can do it.
We certainly could not have moved any quicker. The difference in the strategy was the Democratic managers is what they're called. They took every moment they had. I mean, they literally took every,
even when the Democrats were right.
Oh, even when the senators were like, you could tell they were done. I mean, some of the proceedings went to, there were some nights we went to 2 in the morning. I think it was one night we went to 2 in the morning. And they just kept taking it. So when they finally presented their case and finished, and they went to pretty much 11 o'clock every night for the 3 nights. Our first day was on a Saturday. We went for 2 hours. And what we did in that 2 hours, what our idea was, which worked, was to summarize our entire, what the entire defense was going to be in the case. So we just kind of laid out an overview. Then what we did on Monday, which I think was really, this was something Pat Cipollone and I talked a lot about, and I think it really worked, is we had a lot of different lawyers speak, well-known lawyers from various political parties. You had Alan Dershowitz, a Democrat. You had, I mean, some people that are not really politically affiliated at all that were lawyers on constitutional basis. You had Ken Starr. So we had kind of what I would call a very diverse team of lawyers. And what I did was, what I tried to do that very first day was kind of set it up so that in between each one, I would go up, kind of summarize what was coming. Then the lawyer would make the actual argument. Then there was one, then I made a main argument myself for about 30 minutes, but then I pitched it to the next lawyer, put it to the next lawyer, and they made their arguments. And we dovetailed it. We opened with Ken Starr. So just on, we opened on the constitutional basis, and we closed with Alan Dershowitz
on the
constitutional basis on the first day. And I think that bode well. And then our second day of defense only went, I think, 2.5 hours. I mean, we really kept it tight. And I think the
it handled issue by
issue. The
verdict issue.
Obviously speaks for itself.
Issue by issue. You went through Burisma. You went through the Bidens. You went through Rudy Giuliani. You had different lawyers present different aspects of that. And then I think you and Pat Cipollone got to the bigger picture items of what this means for the presidency, what this means long-term for voters. You talked a lot about the presidential harassment that has been, it's still going. I mean, they're saying they're going to continue the harassment.
Yeah, but I did see that Nancy Pelosi said they're not going to subpoena John Bolton to the House.
Yeah, so I mean, you know.
I think that's done.
And a lot of their professional staff is gone. They were relying on is heading back to their.
Yeah, the lawyers that, and we'll talk about this when we get back, but like they had outside lawyers that they had hired specifically for this. And they have all gone back to their firm. So that kind of tells you, I think, where this is going to in some extent anyways. I'm going to go through some of the trial strategy and who was doing what and how we laid it out when we come back from the break.
And if you have questions for Jay Sekulow, again, this is the day to do it. 1-800-684-3110. While it's fresh on everyone's mind, give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. Questions about only the third impeachment in the U.S. history of a president.
Thank you. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Right now,
I miss that music.
Yeah,
I did miss that music.
Not a lot of music in the U.S. It's very quiet.
Very quiet. Yes.
Right, and especially when those senators
get my
get
band
tough.
Back together. We can pull the band back together now. There we go.
There are a lot of articles saying you got this band. Yeah. A lot of people found out about
it. They called
the
it a dad band, though.
I mean, I don't know. I'm a granddad. Negative so thing. Probably, I mean, yeah, your granddad. A lot of people called me your brother, so there's a lot of things we can say about all these things. But then the truth is, the reality is, there's a lot of people that have been wanting to talk to you over these past 2 weeks that don't visit you. But let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island on line one. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Jerry.
Welcome back. The band is back together.
Yeah, the band's reunited. Another world tour. Yeah. Thank you, Jerry.
You did a great job. My favorite part is when you were at the dais saying, they said they hadn't made their case. Schiff says something, and he said, yes, you did say that. My favorite part. Carry on.
Well, you know, you had to do a lot of it because of the structure of the event. You had to, you know, they had their case. It's what's really strange is you had this Tuesday where we fought over these motions for 13 hours, and I was on my feet a lot during that point. We defeated the motions back, and then they start their case the next day, and then for 3 days you don't speak, not a word. There's no objecting. There's a lot of stuff was going on in the background. I'll tell you. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of. You know, maybe motions being filed and this, but ended up none of that happened, of course. And then what does happen is then you sit there, then you present your case. And what we decided to do was very systematic.
What we saw the House Democrat managers do throughout that motions process was basically over until 2 a.m. that night, present their entire case.
Well, that was an interesting ploy, yeah.
I think they were worried that they could maybe not get past that round.
Well,
there was still that idea that you could have a vote to shut this down, and they thought, they got to get their whole case out immediately.
I think there was a couple things going on. I think, number one, it was the highest rated day.
Yeah.
So it was the first day of the proceedings. The ratings were the highest. Number one. Number two, you're right. They did put their whole case, or try to put their whole case out, and which caused us to, by the way, change, as you know, because you were there and participating. So we changed our approach. So in the motions, we started arguing some of our case, too, which made sense because you wanted to respond with a like-kind response. It got heated. I don't know if they have the heated one. They got very heated between Jerry Nadler, my colleague, Pat Cipollone, and then I kind of came in, and that's when the Chief Justice made that ruling. But they also had this intent from the beginning to drag the Chief Justice, who is not sitting there as, I mean, he's always the Chief Justice, but he was there as the presiding officer. And they were trying to make a point of he can make all these decisions on witnesses, he can make all of this. The truth is he can't.
No, and then he made it clear.
Go ahead.
He made clear through the last time a Chief Justice tried to do that, and it was over like procedural matters, not over like 50
adjournment.
50, yeah, like not serious
Salvin
things.
P. Chase.
And he was chastised by both parties, both the Republicans and Democrats, in the Senate chamber for getting involved in what the Constitution gives the sole power to the Senate to try impeachments. It's when I see these Nancy Pelosi quotes saying this wasn't a real trial. The House has nothing to do with whether the Senate had a trial, because the Senate can set up the trial however it wants. And they had the trial that way, and the Chief Justice made it clear. I think also that question from Senator Elizabeth Warren trying to score political points on a campaign trail. I mean, that I told you about the whole time was bothering me, Dad, right. that you had presidential candidates asking these questions, half of them doing it, like Bernie Sanders was clearly just a campaign ad. Yeah. Well, the Washington Post reports this many lies, this many this. How do you, and then had the House Democrat managers respond. And that was just clipping for him for a campaign ad.
Well, that's a lot of that was what was going on. So the questioning went, so they did their 3 days of their case, which was very long. They took as much time as they had. I mean, I think they went to 23 hours and 40 minutes. So they took all their 24 hours. I don't know what the final calculation was. I'm guessing probably 13 hours.
Yeah, somewhere around
about
there.
Half. Then you went in that 2 days of questioning, and that's pretty intense, because you don't know what's coming, and it's
got
very
more
political.
Intense the later it got, actually.
Yeah, the beginning was pretty straightforward, and then it got pretty intense. So we had one of our colleagues, Pat Philbin, who's a deputy White House counsel. We had him do a lot of the technical issues, and then it was what we would call a substantive response on an allegation or a question, and then either Pat Cipollone or I would do it. And then, of course, the witness argument on whether we were going to have witnesses went 4 hours.
Yep.
And that was pretty intense. And it was intense because you had the whole allegations on the John Bolton book. I addressed that early on.
It just came out that night before.
Yeah. Well, it came out on a Sunday before our second day of our case.
Yeah.
Then it was when we went a whole week.
Oh, then there was another drop of news.
Right. Yeah. They had the other John Bolton release on a portion of his book that came out. And then we addressed that. So, and then we had that. Once we won that vote, which was a significant one, we felt, you know, very confident, and then we brought it to close.
I noticed that after the witness vote, not a lot of John Bolton leaked books.
Yeah, shockingly, huh?
Talking about how, I mean, I think we could say this now. The Democrats had this obviously very well planned out with the liberal media, because they had the Bolton book drop planned, and then that stopped. So they say they had the whole manuscript. You'd think they'd have a lot more to drop. They dropped what they could, and they kept it going until it got absurd and it was no longer helping their case. And it was all these allegations the president preferred this. I mean, that was if you actually read it. But then we actually saw the House Democrat managers, Dad. They had the questions set up in their notebooks by question. I think we could say this now.
Yep. So they had tabs for the questions being asked.
They had
so coordinated with the Democrats that they actually literally had the question, and then they would pull a tab up, and then they would, whoever had that tab in their notebook would be the one that would answer the question. I mean, I just thought it came off. I mean, you know, people will be, you know, critiquing this for the next 100 years. Here's the critique that I think is most important: acquitted.
Yes.
At the end of the day, the president was
no
acquitted.
Witnesses, no witnesses.
By the way, they had witnesses. That was this myth that they kept trying to create. We've had no witnesses. They had 17 witnesses, 16 of which made some form of appearance at the proceeding, whether it was transcripts or a video. And let me take it a step further also. In the Clinton trial, they didn't have any new witnesses. They just had some deposition testimony, just like what you saw played, that they played. It was the same kind of thing. They didn't have new witnesses.
People had already gone through their privilege issues, had been
called
before grand jurors. So they were not new people. But that was the key vote, actually.
Yeah, that was.
In a sense, that the House manager's whole strategy changed to just going after the president. After that point, it got more heated because once they realized they weren't going to continue this on into infinity, which is what they had hoped.
Yeah.
Even though they were saying, oh, we'll just do it in a week and we'll have the Chief Justice handle all due process issues and all of those those kind of things. In reality, when you got past the witness and evidence, the new witnesses, new evidence vote, that was a key victory for the president's legal team. A key victory for the president. When you got that, once that vote was done.
Yeah, no, that was the key. Actually, that was the key vote. It was close, but I thought we made a compelling case. Obviously, a majority of the Senate did, and we proceeded. All right, let's go ahead and take some calls.
Yeah, let's go to Scott calling from Colorado on line 3. Scott, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Okay, guys, thanks for my call. Extraordinary process. We all got to witness. Did an incredible job, Jay.
Thanks.
And Jordan. But my comment is this. I've always felt the impeachment was a cover. The cover for their own corruption. The Democrats learned years ago that the best defense is to go on offense, and they always seem to accuse what they themselves do.
Well, I think that, look, this was, I think, the last gasp attempt to undo the presidency. I mean, you had, I looked at it this way. You had Russia, then you had the obstruction portion of the Russian thing. None of it panned out. Then Bob Mueller testified. That went nowhere. Then Ukraine, well, that was not much, so they tried to turn it into a quid pro quo. Then the quid pro quo doesn't work, and it's abuse of power. Well, abuse of power by itself is not enough, so we better come up with something else. I know we'll put obstruction of Congress for the president for exercising constitutional responsibilities. So there you had that. That was their case. And it never rose to the level of an impeachable offense. And I think that was – we presented on that very first day both schools of thought on how you view high crimes and misdemeanor. Ken Starr had one view. Alan Dershowitz had another. And we put them both up as defense counsel to say under either theory, none of these rose to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor. Right.
Yeah, I think that was something the media kind of missed, is what you were really – the strategy there was to – you are talking to the American people, but you're also talking to the U.S. Senate.
Yep.
And what you're by putting those two different schools of thought up that are different, but they're not necessarily in disagreement. They're just – one is, I think, a little bit more open to like Ken Starr's was, it's got to be – like a crime, it's got to be not a bipartisan impeachment,
right?
And you've got to have procedural due process. So if you have something similar to a crime, bipartisan vote in the House, and you've got due process in that throughout the process,
right,
then it could be impeachable. None of those were met by him, and then you went to Alan Dershowitz, who went full bore and said, if everything you're alleging in this book that is supposedly in the book, which we still don't know if it's in the book, is true. That's not an impeachable offense for purpose of the Constitution. So it went to these different schools of thought that didn't contradict. They're just different schools of thought about why this is not an impeachable offense.
I took the approach that in some of the argument that I did, that not only was it not an impeachable offense, but if you looked at what was really going on, what was this all about? I kept saying that. What is this at the end of the day? And this were policy disputes. Vindman, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, did not like the president's policy on Ukraine, so he didn't like the phone call. As if Lieutenant Colonel Vindman determines presidential foreign policy. And we made clear that under the Constitution, the president is the sole organ in that area. He is his powers are at its highest when it comes to matters of foreign policy. That's the design of our founders. So that was what we were trying to convey. So I want to be clear on that, that was the approach. Fan, is it viewed as Fan Bennett's there in Washington? Is it viewed as over now? It looks like to me it's I mean, the process is, I don't think they're going to try another impeachment in the next, between now and the election, that's for sure.
Jay, Jordan and I talked about this, but the senators literally stood up and said not guilty. I'm not sure how much more over you can get than not guilty.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Yeah, I mean, we will take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today aclj.org.
I'll start off with this. So it's interesting. We've talked about this before, Dad. You said, you know, because of our successes in the Supreme Court and because of the new makeup of the court through two of the latest Supreme Court nominees by President Trump, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, we didn't know how many, like, the religious liberty case would have to go that far. But now, because of your work with President Trump, you've done an impeachment trial, which there's only been three in the history of the country. And there are three cases.
A special counsel investigation.
And now there's going to be three cases in the Supreme Court that you're handling. I mean, you're managing all three, but you're arguing one of them next month.
Yeah, March 31st. I mean, I actually start on that process Monday.
So I want to remind people of that.
So within a one-year period, we closed an investigation that was under the, really, Article 2 executive branch, because that's what the Department of Justice is. Then we handled, so that was the Mueller probe. Then we handled the, of course, the impeachment, which is Article 1. That's congressional. And then next month I go and handle Article 3. So, you know, it's kind of a triple play, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah. I mean, it's been very interesting. I want to go right back to the phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Mike in California, because I thought this was an interesting point when Schiff was kind of going over the line.
Well, he lost it at the end.
Yeah. And Mike, I think, picked up on that. Mike, welcome to JSEC.
Do we have that sound? Yeah, let's play the sound first, and we'll talk to Mike.
All right.
If abuse of power is not impeachable, even though it is clear the founders considered it the highest of all high crimes and misdemeanors, but if it were not impeachable, then a whole range of utterly unacceptable conduct in a president would now be beyond reach. Trump could offer Alaska to the Russians in exchange for support in the next election, or decide to move to Mar-a-Lago permanently and let Jared Kushner run the country, delegating to him the decision whether to go to war.
First of all, that was so absurd. The Constitution doesn't allow that. The president cannot delegate that. I mean, this is, you know, unless he may have Secretary of Defense, and Congress has a role when it's a declaration of war, by the way. Okay, I mean, so Adam Schiff needs to, but this was just part and parcel of it. But go ahead, Mike, go ahead with your question.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Jay, and Jordan for your defense of the president.
Thank you.
But I did want to ask, what was the response or the feeling of the room on the other senators when that absurd statement was made? Yeah. And maybe you might add, what was your response to such a statement by Adam Schiff?
Well, you sat really close to them. You know, their desk was, the only thing that separated us was that little podium. I mean, it probably was, what, from where Pat Cipollone and I sat, what was it, 3 feet, 5 feet?
Yes.
Probably five feet, maybe.
5 feet.
I think it was a sign of real desperate. I thought when he had his closing, and then he went into that riff, I got the impression that he had, at that point, he knew he was losing, and he just kind of lost it. And I think that's what happened. I really do think that's what happened, because it was completely nonsensical.
And that was kind of the, and he knew that was it for him. He was not going to be able to speak again on the Senate floor. And I love the fact that Marsha Blackburn, who was the presiding, she was the president of the Senate for that time period, she got to gavel and tell the sergeant at arms for the Senate to march the managers out of the Senate after the president was acquitted. Because it's a serious charge to bring an impeachment charge against a president.
Yep.
And then to go into the U.S. Senate and take up so much of their time when there was not just an acquittal, but I think it's important. It was a majority acquittal.
Yeah.
Which you don't need to be acquitted.
To get a president convicted, you need 67 votes.
So if they got 65, you're acquitted still.
Yeah.
But he got a majority of votes to acquit.
On both counts.
And I think that is, just an important point. Let's go to Chris in Texas on line four. Chris, welcome to JSECO Live.
Hey, Chris.
Thank you, Jay. I just want to thank you and the other attorneys from a very grateful nation that you even agreed to defend our president. You all have God-given intellect and ability to speak, and I'm just thankful you bless other people by serving them.
Well, I appreciate that, and it was an experience of a lifetime, I'll tell you that. I'm glad things are going to return to a bit of normal now, and I say normal, maybe the new normal, but we've got a lot of work here at the ACLJ we're dealing with, too. We're still dealing with Pastor Saw's case in China. We've got a case we just filed on the abortion issue at the Supreme Court. We just had a big win on an abortion case. So, again, on the pro-life issue, still front and center at the ACLJ. But this was an experience of a lifetime. I don't know if it's all sunk in. I think it sunk in when it was said acquitted it.
when the Chief Justice read that order, I think it kind of sunk in. But they were doing everything they could to get the Chief Justice. I don't know if we have that bite, but let's find it for the next segment, where they finally asked the Chief Justice if he would rule. And they said, and he said, no. I'm aware of what Salmon P. Chase did. There were two motions to adjourn. I am not going to do that. And that was, I think, the last part of the questioning that came up. They really try to pit us against the Chief Justice by making it sound like we were not confident in the Chief Justice. It wasn't that we weren't confident in the Chief Justice. It's just, it's not his role. That's not what he is. That's not what he's charged to do under the Constitution. Well, he made it crystal clear when it became his time to say it.
Yeah, and which was really the only time he really spoke in a definitive way on a procedural matter.
Let's grab another.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Brent in D.C. on line 5. Brent, welcome to JSecio Live.
Thank you, guys. I was wondering if you guys would want to comment on the immediate impact that this process has had with both the managers introducing and Pam Bondi's presentation regarding the Biden or the potential Biden corruption into Ukraine. It just seems like in the media that they're all surprised at how low Biden's numbers were in
His numbers were low before all this. I mean, I'll turn to Jordan on the politics of it. I don't think what the lawyers did had. I mean, they brought it up first of all. They brought it up. I wonder if they were trying to hurt Biden.
There's a lot of politics going on in that room. Remember, we were talking. We had three presidential candidates. You had former presidential candidates on the Republican side. You had three current presidential candidates and a couple former presidential candidates in this cycle on the Democrat side. So you had like Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, but you also had Klobuchar. You had Warren and Bernie Sanders there. It was Adam Schiff and the House managers who spent a quarter of their time?
Who did?
Something very significant amount of their time, like about a quarter of their time in their 3-day period.
On the Biden matter.
On Biden's and Burisma, and they kept saying, it's been investigated, it's a sham, it's a hoax, so we had to respond. But listen, Joe Biden was already not, obviously, he did the same thing he did in Iowa that he's done in his last two presidential campaigns. He hasn't resonated. He actually did better this time in Iowa than ever before. Usually he's not cracked 1%. But I think he's been hurting since the beginning. But they brought that on themselves, and I've always thought part of the move by the House Democrats, including Pelosi and others, was that they would let Biden, in a sense, take the beating on this to push their case against the president.
I don't know what their internal politics were. I think Joe Biden's issues or the political issues are way beyond this impeachment proceeding. But they made it a major part of the...
And so you had to respond.
Yeah. Do we have time to play this one, Will? Or should we save it? No, we can play it. This was John Roberts. Well, it's near the end of the... I'll save it. We got another half hour of the broadcast coming up. I want to talk about that because this was an interesting trial tactic that they utilized. We'll have more for this, and we'll have some when Schumer asked Roberts the question. It'd be very interesting to see how he did it.
So Jody did ask, this is interesting. Is it safe to say this is the biggest win in your political career?
Yeah. In my political career?
And your legal career.
Legal career? Yeah, 100%. I mean, this was first of all, it was a 2-week, almost, we were there for three. I mean, by the time the whole thing went forward, it was almost 2.5 weeks. And sure, I mean, you're defending the president, the office of the presidency, and the president of the United States, and in my case, of the president of the United States, and an attempt on impeachment. So I think, biggest proceeding. It almost seems like everything pales in comparison in one sense. But look, we're back on our other cases now at the ACLJ. We're going to continue to fight.
And a lot of those cases are up at ACLJ.org. We are a huge organization. A lot of lawyers who've been continued in court while this was going on. And all that's up at ACLJ.org, and we'll get back into it next week as well. But second half hour coming up, more questions about the impeachment trial.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. There was an interesting dichotomy or an interesting approach was going on the floor of the Senate during this entire two-week process, and that was the House managers, as they're called. We're the defense lawyers, the president's counsels. It's the way it reads is it says House managers, president's counsel. Mr. Counsel Sekulow is how it reads in the transcript. Mr. Counsel Cipollone, manager Schiff. That's how it reads. But they were doing everything they could. Harry Hutchins has just joined our director of policy. I'm going to play the bite in a minute. But, Harry, they were doing everything they could from the beginning until the end to try to drag the Chief Justice substantively into this impeachment process, not just as a presiding officer, which is bang the gavel, do the resolution. It was they wanted him to rule.
Absolutely. And that reflects in part the distinct and distinguished weakness of their case and the weakness of the arguments that they brought forward. On one hand, they consistently said, we have an absolutely overwhelming case. There is absolutely no doubt. But even though we have conducted a rigged, one-sided investigation in the House, we need additional witnesses. And I think they did a skillful job, even though it was a misleading job, of claiming that you can't have a trial without witnesses, without acknowledging the fact that they had 17 witnesses.
I know that. That's why I kept saying, I mean, I must have said that 15 times at the hearing. What are they talking about? You've heard from 16 of them you heard from. 13 by video. You actually saw their death testimony. And another three, their transcripts were referenced. So you had a lot of witnesses, but they were constantly trying to bring the Chief Justice in. And it got to the point when Schiff kept bringing it up and up and up. Chuck Schumer finally went to the podium. As the Democratic leader, he had his podium there. Here's what he said.
The Democratic leader will state the inquiry.
Is the Chief Justice aware that in the impeachment trial of President Johnson, Chief Justice Chase, as presiding officer, cast tie-breaking votes on both March 31st and April 2nd, 1868?
I am, Mr. Leader. The one concerned a motion to adjourn, the other concerned a motion to close deliberations. I do not regard those isolated episodes 150 years ago as sufficient to support a general authority to break ties.
He also went on to say, there's another part of this I hope we can get, where he said that it would be wrong for an unelected government leader from another branch to actually engage this. Than, what's kind of the sense in Washington today? I mean, I'm saying this. I've been there for a month, and I left yesterday. But what are you picking up as you've been going around Capitol Hill?
Well, look, the United States Senate on the Republican side, Jay, has returned right back to business as normal. They've got five judges on the docket to confirm next week. You heard President Trump mention that in his press conference. I think there's a question on the Democrat side of the aisle where they're going to turn. And, Jay, look, I mean, that sound you just played, I think that was one of the two important questions as it relates to these two chambers. Of course, the not guilty was the most important for this right. president. But, Jordan, Jay, our founders had a very careful balance of who is responsible, and you don't see that to an unelected official. They gave that to a political branch for a reason, and both the witness vote and that exchange you just played with the Chief Justice, Jay, those are the two most important points on that matter.
What did you think, Jordan? What's your impression? You there for it?
Yeah, I think that the ultimately what this was all about was the House managers, even though they said that we could do it in a week, even though they knew that was a lie, they wanted to keep this trial going almost until the election. I mean, I think that was really their goal.
Yeah.
If they could tie you up, if you had to go tie up in court over privilege issues and immunity issues and things like that, that honestly there would not be a final vote on this, even though the final vote would have been likely about the same.
Yeah, but Jerry Nadler kept calling it, you know, executive privilege and other nonsense.
But I think that their goal was to keep this going for months, even though they would claim, oh, we'll get this done in a week. They knew that wasn't in good faith. And so when they lost that opportunity and they knew that this was not going to continue for months, they were going to use every hour they got, but the hours kept ticking away, and the American people were tuning in less and less to hear Adam Schiff repeat the same thing over and over and have him and Jerry Nadler fight for the podium.
It'd be very interesting to see what the post-mortem.
Notice our team was never fighting for who was going to the podium.
No, we always had it. It was very well organized. We had to make some split-second decisions, but we did it.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
This move for witnesses was probably the biggest thing that was going on. That was kind of their thematic throughout the high trial. And Harry, you just pointed out that they kept saying there was no witnesses, but there were witnesses. I mean, they had 17 that they had testify in the House, 16 of which were utilized in the trial.
I think that is precisely correct. But they wanted to ignore those witnesses on one hand, but then they wanted to use those witnesses to make their case. And so you really cannot have your argument both ways. I think at the end of the day, what the team, the president's defense team, exposed was that this impeachment was completely partisan, completely shambolic, and completely rigged. And yet, even though it was rigged to an overwhelming extent in the House of Representatives, that was insufficient, and the House managers knew it. They also undermined their case by holding on to the articles of impeachment for a month.
Yep. So that was the emergency.
So on one hand, they claim it's an emergency. It's a 9/11 call for our nation's democracy, but we need to impeach, go on holiday, and then send the articles of impeachment over to the Senate when Nancy Pelosi was ready.
There was also this view that they were the ones that were going to get witnesses. They kept saying, we need witnesses, which we, of course, said you had witnesses and you should have done your job. But the fact is, we would have gotten witnesses too.
Yeah. This was, I think, one of, I know from our audience, I know this was when Dan was hosting the show, but from the audience, one of their favorite exchanges, and it was one that was put out a lot by social media, I think by the White House, by the GOP.
A lot of views.
Yes.
I don't know how many, but a lot.
This was the exchange I think people loved, because finally Adam Schiff had to go head-to-head and had to answer questions, go back and forth, and didn't love answering questions ever about
himself.
Could
you imagine, though, that I was able – I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back on this, but I was able to get Adam Schiff to answer questions on the floor of the Senate and Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, take a listen.
The Democratic leader.
There has been conflicting testimony about how long the Senate might be tied up in obtaining additional evidence. At the beginning of this trial, the minority leader offered 11 amendments to obtain additional evidence in the form of documents and depositions from several federal agencies. If the Senate had adopted all 11 of these amendments, how long do you think this impeachment trial would take?
It would take a long time. It would take a long time just to get through those motions. But there have been 17 witnesses. We're talking about now additional witnesses that the managers have put forward and that Democratic leader Schumer has discussed. He's discussed four witnesses in particular, as if this body would, if it were to grant witnesses, would say, yes, you get those four witnesses, and the White House and the President's counsel gets what? Whatever I want. That's what he said, Mr. Schumer. Whatever I want, here's who I want. I want Adam Schiff. I want Hunter Biden. I want Joe Biden. I want the whistleblower. I want to also understand there may be additional people within the House Intelligence Committee that have had conversations with that whistleblower. I get anybody we want. By the way, if we get anybody we want, we will be here for a very long time. The fact of the matter is, we're not here to argue witnesses tonight, but it obviously is an undercurrent. But to say that this is not going to extend this proceeding, months. Because understand something else. Despite the, you know, executive privilege and other nonsense, I suspect Manager Schiff, smart guy, he's going to say, wait a minute, I got some speech and debate privileges that may be applicable to this. I'm not saying that they are, but they may raise it, be legitimate to raise it. So this is a process that we would be, this would be the first of many weeks. I think we've got to be clear. They put this forward in an aggressive and fast-paced way. And now they're saying, well, now we need witnesses. After 31 or 32 times you said you proved every aspect of your case. That's what you said. Well, you didn't. You said he just said he did. Well, then I don't think we need any witnesses.
There you go. Seems like it was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, somebody, one of the, I think it was Politico, one of them said, so what are you doing now that this is over? I said, I don't know, sleep would be good.
Yeah, sleep, and then prepare for a Supreme Court case.
Yeah, start the Supreme Court prep on Monday. So
I mean, I want to go to Than on this, because Than, what was the reaction of radio listeners to that? I mean, we were only able to call in for moments at a time, but to see that kind of exchange with Chuck Schumer and him, and then also with Adam Schiff.
Yeah, this one was completely fascinating, Jordan. I mean, it goes back, first of all, to something that you talked about with your dad just a minute ago. I've been in that chamber many times, so I described to our listeners the close proximity you talked about, the fact that Leader Schumer and Manager Schiff were just feet away. So I watched that, Jordan, I was just sort of overwhelmed by sort of the tension that had to exist in that moment in just those few feet of space. I was surprised that Leader Schumer responded. I was surprised that Manager Schiff responded. But it really did make the case on both points. And I think to our audience, Jordan, to answer your question, I think they really got how important that moment was when Manager Schiff says, yeah, we believe we've proved the case. Because even if there were senators who weren't sure, if the prosecution believed they had proved their case, well, then why did we need to take more of the Senate's time up? I really thought in that moment, Jordan, that that was when it became inevitable that there weren't going to be additional witnesses called and that they were going to send that message to the House. Don't send these cases over here anymore unless they're fully ready to try. Do your job in the House and leave the Senate to try a case.
I think that, Harry, I do think that was the kind of law. I said that this should never happen again. Inappropriate. It's not the way it's supposed to. This was the fear of the founding fathers taking place. A partisan impeachment trial proceeding where not only was it partisan, but that the House did not do their job.
I think that is precisely correct. But I also think that the House managers were so blinded by partisanship, they were not able to look at the arguments carefully. And so they made arguments that were incoherent. On one hand, they have proved their case. They said between 60 and 90 times that the case was proved, that it was overwhelming, that it was beyond doubt. Jerry Nadler said that even a 10-year-old could understand that this case was proved. Essentially, Jerry Nadler, of course, was making the arguments that a 10-year-old might make. But if you look at Adam Schiff, if you look at Jerry Nadler, if you look at Minority Leader Schumer, they continue to make unintelligent arguments again and again. We need more witnesses to prove our already overwhelming case. But I also think by continuing to make that argument, they continue to weaken their claim, because if their case is absolutely overwhelming, why do they need to make this argument again and again?
Well, they want to rinse and repeat.
That they lost their own their own audience by continuing to hit the repeat button.
That's what they
did. And sometimes I would tune in and I would say to myself, didn't we just hear this argument?
No, they did that.
And so they just said, we are going to keep repeating it.
They played
and
they the same
did the
videos.
Same thing in closing.
Yeah, and they did the same videos. I think they say played each video seven times. It was basically wash, rinse, repeat. I mean, it was it was the same.
Instead of tailoring arguments to specific senators, which our team did, I think we can say that now, that there were messages being sent to senators.
Legal
that
arguments,
had, because there were senators talking to the press saying what they wanted addressed, and then, of course, they got their questions.
Right.
But the House managers never deviated from – I mean,
they stuck with their
Hakeem
script.
Jeffries, he stole, he cheated.
No, it was cheat, caught, cover up. That's what he said every time.
That's all he said every time.
Every
any
time,
question?
Same thing. Yeah.
And I was very surprised. I will say, I think one of the worst decisions Adam Schiff made was when Lisa Murkowski asked a very pointed question about getting Bolton's testimony. And instead of Adam Schiff or one of the more well-versed managers going up and taking her question seriously, this is one of the more moderate members of the U.S. Senate that's a Republican. Could have gone either way on that question. She asked that direct question. Wouldn't Bolton settle all of this? And they sent him up to do the same thing.
Cover up. Yep.
And then she looked at that. I mean, this is, I can tell you, because you're sitting there, and she just started shaking her head, looking at us like, you know, putting her hands up in the air. They won't answer my questions. I mean, they would actually mouth that out. That's not answering my question.
So John Roberts, they tried it from the beginning to the end. They tried to get John Roberts to engage. I played for you what he said initially. Can we play that little bit again, the first part, and then I'm going to set up the next part, okay? So this is what initially was said when Schumer raised the question.
The Democratic leader will state the inquiry.
Is the Chief Justice aware that in the impeachment trial of President Johnson, Chief Justice Chase, as presiding officer, cast tie-breaking votes on both March 31st and April 2nd, 1868?
I am, Mr. Leader. The one concerned a motion to adjourn, the other concerned a motion to close deliberations. I do not regard those isolated episodes 150 years ago as sufficient to support a general authority to break ties.
And then he specifically said why he will not do it here.
I think it would be inappropriate for me, an unelected official from a different branch of government, to assert the power to change that result so that the motion would succeed.
All right, let's go back to the phone. No, we got 26. But we've got another segment coming up, and what we're going to do in that is take your phone calls, take your questions and your comments. And maybe we'll take some Facebook comments and questions during this break as well, because we've got a number of those as well.
They have a video.
There's video, too. But 1-800-684-3110 in case a phone line does open up. And check out ACLJ.org to see what else the ACLJ has been up to. A lot of work.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to go right to questions. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're going to go in the order people have been holding on. Kathy in Louisiana on line six. Kathy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say thank you for representing our president so exceptionally well.
Thank you. It was an honor.
And I can tell you, the only time I turned up my volume is when the defense team was at the podium. I just could not listen to anything else they had to say.
We had to sit there for 3 days and say nothing. That was not an easy task, but you had to do it, and that was the nature of it. And I appreciate you. I appreciate everybody praying for us. Like I said, our other ACLJ lawyers were working on ACLJ cases. A couple ACLJ lawyers that we utilized for this case, of course, they were retained separately to do that, to have the experience of doing that. They were very helpful, but I wanted some of our team to have some of that experience. But as I said, they were retained separately, to paid for separately, not by the ACLJ, of course, but they got to participate, and they did a great job. I need to say that. Jordan did a great job. Mark Oldfeder, Ben Sisney did a great job. Miles Terry, I mean, they did a great job, and I think it was fair to say it was an experience. You will never, I told them, cherish every moment of this, because that's not happening again in our, at least I hope not, in our lifetime. And I'll tell you something else. When we left, after everybody left, Pat Cipollone and I went back in and just kind of took it in for a moment.
Yeah, it was pretty
moving.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, someone who's most of my life's been politics and law, to be on the Senate floor, which you don't get to do as a civilian, as a non-member of the Senate,
right?
Or unless you're some kind of staff position, in a very senior staff position, but to be there, to have that kind of access in and out, I mean, speaking to the senators, walking around the chamber during the breaks, speaking to the senators, will that ever happen again? Hopefully not for the country in the sense of an impeachment. I will tell you, because there's been some like this media criticism. Let me answer this. If you had an opportunity in your legal organization to have a number, some of your more junior, but rising to level senior attorneys.
Junior partners.
Yeah. Be involved in this. So that they could take this knowledge to the ACLJ.
Yeah.
Why would you not do that?
Well, here's
this criticism has been, I think, just so unfounded. You would, of course, take that opportunity because it will make them ACLJ, which is what the media is scared about, 100 times stronger, 10 times bigger long term. And we've just shown, as you just showed the American people, the abilities you have now on a criminal investigation like Mueller, an impeachment, and the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, look, here was the idea. I know we got, there were some, you know, some of these newspaper articles. Hatchet jobs out there. Of course, let me tell you how it worked. We made the decision that we were going to give, as Jordan said, some of our people the opportunity to participate in an unbelievably historic moment. And to do that, we know how to do it. You have to pay them separately. They're paid for by our law firm, which, of course, represented the president here. We didn't do the representation as the ACLJ, so they were compensated separately. Didn't use ACLJ. Didn't even use we had separate offices. Everything was set up to do it that way. And, of course, the truth is, during the process, we were really working primarily out of the White House.
Right.
We were working with the White House counsel. But to not give these lawyers the opportunity, I saw that it was an AP article, which it was just nasty. You know what? It was a great experience for all of us that were involved, and I just want to say Andy Economo, who you've seen on this broadcast a lot, who is a private counsel, he's our special counsel, but he's a private lawyer. He participated as well, and it was just a tremendous opportunity.
For the long term benefits of the ACLJ, there's now a number of attorneys who've gone through this and have gone through these motions, and for the law schools,
Regent University.
For a lot of different reasons. But back to the phones we go.
Yep.
William in California, line three, has been holding on. William, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, William.
Hi, Jay. I've been a longtime supporter, and you made me very happy about that. But my question is, when you close your arguments after 13 hours, some of the opposition talking heads seem to be very upset about that.
Yeah, sure they were.
So I was wondering, was that part of a grand strategy of yours? And what was the theory behind that? And
my grand strategy was to get it done in 8 hours. I mean, I really wanted to get this thing done in one day. I thought we could have put on our defense in one day. The problem was that because of the way the weekend was set up, we had to start on Saturday, and so we only went 2 hours on Saturday, gave the overview, and then we took the full next day to do the case, which was, I think, 8 or 9 hours.
Yeah.
That's all it needed. You know what? Less is more. And I do that in Supreme Court cases, too. I don't just go up there and chat. So everything we said had a point. The pundits were critical of it. Why? Because it was affecting their ratings.
Yes, I was about to say, less ratings, less for them to critique. because all they wanted to do was go with a fine-tooth comb and critique the president's legal team any way they could, any way possible.
I saw some of the critiques, but you know what one of them said? I'm not going to give the name. They asked, it was on one of the major more liberal networks. They said, well, what do you think happened here? And the lawyer commentator said, the president's team just won.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, they were honest when they got to the legal commentators. I'm talking more like the host.
Yeah.
And these political commentators they had on who are not attorneys.
Yeah.
So when we finished early, that cut off a day of ratings for them.
Yeah.
And that's why they were angry.
It did. It cut. I mean, we went 8 hours on Monday and then 2 hours on. So I think we went a total of 12 hours, 13 hours total. And they criticized it all at once. Guess what? The verdict is 2/3 of them, Congress, Senate, not voting for conviction. The president was not guilty and acquitted. Let's go ahead and take another call.
Yeah, Carol in Colorado on line two. Carol, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jay. I've been one of your supporters for years.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was so proud of you. I was just rooting for you all the time.
Well, I appreciate that. We can feel the prayers, I'll tell you that.
And thank you for protecting President Donald Trump from the accusers. You did a wonderful job. You spoke for all the people who support you and love you.
Well, I'll tell you this. Yeah, Carol, we had a great team. Pat Cipollone, great lawyer. Pat Philbin, great lawyer. You saw Mike Papora. These were the White House counsels. Pam Bondi, Eric Hirschman, Bob Ray, Ken Starr, Alan Dershowitz. I mean, we put together a legal team.
Jane
Raskin handled the. They were trying to make Rudy the bad guy, and instead she made him the defense lawyer, which is what he was. Yeah,
I think you're absolutely correct, and I also think that was necessary because essentially this trial represented the release of the man and woman of lawlessness inherent in the Democratic Party. In other words, the Constitution really doesn't matter, the rules don't matter, the president's Article II powers don't matter. It's power at the end of the day that matters, and that's why the president needed a very strong and stalwart defense team.
Well, he got it. So, Than, give me let's get one more call, and then I got something really quickly for Than.
Christian in South Carolina, final call of the day. Christian, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Am I on?
Yep.
Thank you very much. First, I wanted to say thank you so much to Jay.
Sure.
That was a wonderful job
you
did. I know we appreciate it.
Thanks.
My question is this. I was a Democrat, but after the last 3 years, what I've seen from the Democrat Party, they've not only disgusted me, but they've actually frightened me.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that you were serious and Donald Trump was serious, and they said that this shouldn't happen again.
Well, no,
and
I think this was the fear of the founding fathers. And a partisan impeachment should never happen again, and I think the message was received by the American people, got that message. I think maybe even the House. I'll go to Than. You think they got it? I don't think they're going to run up another one of these. I just don't see it. They may yell and scream.
I think Speaker Pelosi.
Go ahead.
She probably should have followed her first instinct rather than the one she went with, Jay.
Yeah. Oh, she got pressured. She could tell she didn't want to do it even though they were doing it. But anyways, well, that does it. Good way to wrap up the week again. Thank you for the support of the ACLJ. You can do that at ACLJ.org for all of the work that the ACLJ is engaged in the United States and around the globe. We'll talk to you next week.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.